Called the House Special Committee on Energy. The time is 3:03. Present in the committee meeting today is Representative Tuck, Co-Chair Edgman, Representative Ramirez, Representative Peterson, and Representative Dahlstrom. Today, the Energy Committee will be hearing a set of House concurrent resolutions 2, 3, 4, and 5. And they are offered by Representative Ramirez. This time, would you like to present your resolutions?
Madam Co-Chair, I would like to, for discussion purposes, move the resolutions and then object so we can formally discuss the resolutions, and that would be moving HCR 2, HCR 3, HCR 4, and HCR 5 as a block, and then object for discussion purposes.
Thank you.
And thank you. Madam Chair, would you prefer that I sit there or here? What's your preference?
Whatever you're comfortable with, Representative. I mean, you're more than welcome to.
If it's okay, in that way I'm talking to people instead of, that's all right?
That's great.
Yes.
Okay.
Members of the committee, I'm honored to be a member of the newly formed House Energy Committee, and also to be represented from District 10. I have four House resolutions that we have developed with the help of Margaret Dowling, who's on our staff, and Jane Pearson, who most everyone in this room and table are familiar with. And I'm delighted to bring those before you. And I'm very grateful, Co-Chairman Edgman, to move these before the committee as a block. I believe for the purposes of discussion, if it pleases the chair, I'd like to limit the discussion to each resolution in sequence, and then if and when the committee is satisfied, we can move to the next one, or if it's your preference. And I believe that I would prefer, for the benefit of the Secretary, to actually move them as a block, but to vote them out individually and to close HCR 2 or HCR 2, and then to close HCR 3. And I think it would probably be easier for housekeeping. That's not too presumptuous.
Nope, that's what we had planned, so that will work out perfect.
So with that, members of the committee and co-chairs Edgman and Millett, I'd like to first bring before the committee HCR 2. HCR 2 recognizes that it is in the best interest of all Alaskans to move forward on an in-state gas line. And there are members at this table and in this room who were advocates of AGIA. There are members at this table and in this room who were advocates of Denali. But in either case, neither of those large diameter gas pipeline projects offer a solution to in-state use in a timely enough fashion for some of the regions throughout the rail belt. I am from Fairbanks. Representative or Co-Chair Edgman, you also are represent communities that were on diesel. Those of us that come from diesel-based economies can appreciate, in a manner with all due respect, those of you from South Central simply cannot grasp how dire it was in not only in rural communities like yours, Co-Chair Edgman, but in urban communities that suffer, you know, extraordinarily subarctic temperatures. My home would go through 300 gallons of home heating oil in a month. I had many constituents who were in homes in the $90,000 to $110,000 range who were going through more than 200 gallons of fuel per month at $4.50 a gallon. They were spending more money on home heating oil than they were on their mortgage payment for their homes. And communities can't stay healthy under that kind of an economic strain. So in our pursuit of an in-state gas line, one of the very first things that we have to recognize is the certainty of supply. And although everybody in this building is hopeful that Anadarko's exploration in the Gubik fields and the governor's proposal in her State of the State to build a road to Umiat, which was also an objective of former Governor Murkowski because of the potential of oil and gas, you know, as we go west up on the up in the North Slope Basin. But I think that we all recognize that it's important that we have a not only a primary supply of gas, but also a contingent supply of gas. And so HCR2 recognizes the value of the producing natural gas from the Gubik area, as is on page 1, line 4, but also recognizes the importance of finding a contingent gas supply so that if we build a 20-inch pipeline, which is capable of up to 500 million cubic feet a day, and 500 cubic feet a day times 365 days a year is roughly 180 billion cubic feet a year. And if you were trying to amortize a pipe over a 20-year period, that would be about 3.6 trillion cubic feet of gas. Now, we believe that already a proven discovery in the Gubik area is 600 billion cubic feet of gas, and Anadarko is, I believe, drilling their third exploratory well up there. But the question arises, what if they find 1.5 or 2 Ts of gas, but they don't find an adequate supply of gas to amortize a 20-year supply within that pipeline? And so HCR2 lays out a series of whereases that would direct the governor to and her administration to help source a contingent supply of gas so that we would have the ability to amortize a 20-inch pipeline. And in summary, that's what HCR2 does. It recommends that other areas on the North Slope, if necessary, in sufficient quantities to support a bullet line project. And with that, I'd like to conclude my testimony and be available for questions. And I'm not sure who we have online. We have some people that are willing to testify. Thank you.
Is there any discussion or questions from the committee members? Okay, we're going to go to public testimony. Online is Frank Abeg. Online.
Hello.
Hi, Frank.
Abeg. Hi.
Abeg. Hi. Would you like to state your name and your affiliation and give us your testimony?
My name is Frank Abeg, and I'm a resident of Fairbanks, Alaska, and I'm an individual retired citizen, but also active as a volunteer with Fairbanks Economic Development Corporation.
Okay. Do you have some testimony for us today?
Yes. I have read all of the four. I wasn't ready to just discuss one of the resolutions, but I guess I can put my statements on record and then listen. There was a group of citizens in Fairbanks the last 3 years have been studying the energy problem and trying to come up with solutions for energy, better health for the area, their PM 2.5 problem. And this past winter, a group of about 50 people, all volunteers, worked on studying the state energy profile, looked at Fairbanks, understood the use of fuel oil, the impact of staying on the oil and the oil pricing structure in the world. And we looked at pipelines, the supply issues, we looked at the gas market, we looked at the gas fields. And the report is supposed to be published this week through Fairbanks Economic Development, called the In-State Gas Pipeline Options. That report basically boiled down to looking at the ANGDA line, the spur line, the bullet line of NSTARS, and Fairbanks Natural Gas LNG supply off the North Slope. Each of those had good things, each of them had bad things. But when you look at the Anchorage area and Fairbanks, the one project that brings the most promise is the bullet line. The bullet line would connect the major rail belt areas. It would connect and have the possibility of connecting a number of gas fields, Gubik, the North Slope, also possibly Nenana and the Yukon Flats, and Cook Inlet. So now we have gas fields with a road, a pipeline that they can sell their gas, market it, and there's competition. If you look at the numbers, Fairbanks burns, the community burns about 50 million gallons of fuel oil a year for heating and residential and commercial. If 70% of that market could be moved to gas, it would definitely improve our PM 2.5, but it would also save the community about $120 million based on $2.50 a gallon fuel oil and $10 or $12 MCF gas. If you add the electric utilities to that, that also burn fuel oil, and the refineries, you can double that number to a savings of about $250 million a year. The Anchorage area is running out of gas. If their gas price happens to go up by $3 because they have to import LNG, that could be $250 million for residential, commercial, and utilities, an extra for their community. You put those two numbers together, and you can get to $500 million a year, which is the cost of the bullet line. $4 billion bullet line at 12% rate of return is about $500 million a year. The do-nothing scenario is going to cost Alaska one way or the other, or save our economy. And so anything the state can do to expedite the bullet line will help Anchorage get gas early. That's permitting, right-of-ways, roads, whatever. But the next 5 years is critical. So the economy of Alaska, this is a big deal. It's our air quality, it's jobs, it's the ability for Alaskans to attain access to a resource, and that's where I think your group there has a big challenge. And as a public citizen, after looking at all the options, I would really support the bullet line. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Abegg. Did you want to stay online and give testimony for the other resolutions also, or will that be your only testimony?
Testimony I have is future industry.
Okay, well,
comes up with Agrium.
Okay, would you like to stay on the line for HCR 3 then?
Yes.
Okay. And can we let the record reflect that Representative Johansson joined us? Do we have Elizabeth Gray online?
Yes, ma'am.
Do you like to state your name and your affiliation and give your testimony to the committee?
Yes. Good afternoon, Co-Chairs Edgman, Millett, and members of the House Energy Committee. My name is Elizabeth Gray, and I'm the Assistant Manager for the Matanuska Susitna Borough. I'm accompanied today by Mark Mayo, our Planning Director, and Brad Swartz, Transportation Manager.
Okay.
We're here today to let you know that the Matanuska Susitna Borough supports the construction of a natural gas line to help meet the immediate gas needs of South Central and Interior Alaska. I would like to touch briefly on some of the problems that we face today. As you're aware, the Cook Inlet natural gas supplies are dwindling, and they're getting increasingly difficult to reach. Meanwhile, the demand for gas in Alaska is growing. The supply shortfall will grow over the next few years, and in 2010, local natural gas supplies in South Central Alaska are projected to be short 8.6 billion cubic feet. And by 2012, the shortfall is estimated at 11 billion cubic feet. Estimates show that 52% of our state will be affected if the state runs out of gas supplies in the next few years. The proposed Bullet natural gas pipeline can be completed within the next few years and meet near-term gas needs and create new economic activities as well. The Mat-Su Borough supports the creation of a gas line, which will help provide energy security for the state of Alaska. And the bullet line will facilitate natural resource extraction and value-added processing to include development of a major cement production plant at Globe Creek in Livengood. This could possibly reactivate the Agrium fertilizer plant in Kenai. I would also like to bring to the attention of the committee a project that will support the construction of the bullet line. This project is the proposed rail extension from the Alaska Railroad main line to Port McKenzie. The rail line will help lower the cost of the building of the bullet line and will provide much-needed gas to Alaska. By utilizing the Port McKenzie rail location, the bullet line is projected to cost approximately $100 million less than bringing construction equipment and materials in through other ports of entry. So according to an October 2008 study by the Institute of Social and Economic Research, the additional resource extraction investment that will be facilitated by the rail extension will generate 500 to 1,000 direct full-time jobs. And according to the Northern Economic Study of 2007, the rail extension project itself will also have a statewide benefit and is estimated to create 3,200 to 3,400 construction jobs. currently two-thirds of Alaska's economy depends on federal government or petroleum industry for jobs. The Mat-Su Borough wholeheartedly supports the immediate construction of a natural gas line and rail extension to further diversify the economy and limit the state's dependence on these two sectors. And with that, we would like to thank the co-chairs and the committee members for your time and support. And this concludes our testimony.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Is there any questions for Elizabeth from the committee? No. Thank you, Elizabeth. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Is Mark Mayo online?
Yes.
Yes, I'm here. Elizabeth gave the testimony for the borough. I'm just here in support.
Okay. Thank you, Mark. And next we have Curtis Thayer online from NSTAR. Are you there, Curtis?
Thank you very much. Basically, NSTAR supports
Curtis?
All four.
Curtis?
Yes.
Can you state your name and your?
Oh, I'm sorry. Curtis
sorry.
Thayer, NSTAR Natural Gas.
Thank you.
Sorry. NSTAR supports the resolutions as they go hand in hand in providing the foundation for our project to move forward. The need for an industrial anchor such as LNG or Agrium cannot be overemphasized in providing for a reasonable tariff for the consumers along the railroad. And one thing that I'd like to especially point out is the legislature about 15 months ago recognized the need to lower the in-tax, the in-state tax rate on in-state use of gas. And because of your actions, we're seeing Gubik being proved up by Anadarko. We're seeing Doyon drilling in the Nanana Basin. We're seeing action in the Yukon Flats. And that's a very positive message that you have sent. And with that, NSTAR committed in March of last year before the Senate Resources to start looking at a bullet line. And last year, we completed over $5 million worth of work. And we're budgeted this year to spend $14 million and move forward and then possibly up to $53 million in 2010. And this is all because, again, South Central needs the gas because the large fields in Cook Inlet were discovered and we've used those gas fields up. In 2004, there was a study by the Department of Energy that said to find half the amount of gas, and if it was on shore, it would cost in the neighborhood of $5 to $6 billion. And we know that there's gas in Gubik. We hope that it's enough to anchor our line. If not, we're designing a pipeline that can go to the North Slope. And that gas can give South Central Alaska and the interior gas for the next 50 years. And that's one thing that we need more than anything else. One thing is that there is obviously an accessible in-state market. Not only do you have the Fairbanks Natural Gas, you also have Golden Valley Electric that could use this natural gas, as well as Flint Hills. Currently, Elmendorf and Fort Richardson currently are served by natural gas here in Cook Inlet, but Eielson and Fort Wainwright are not. And one of the reasons they always find themselves in the BRAC closure list recently is because of their high energy costs. And if natural gas could be brought into that community, we could also be saving two military bases. In addition, we have Chugach from Minnesota Light and Power that needs the gas going into the future, as well as MEA, who would like to build gas plant here in South Central. Agrium, there's been discussions with Agrium. They obviously would like to reopen the plant. LNG, we can continue to export, in addition to other industrial. So this line is something that we're committed to doing, and would urge passage of all four of these resolutions, and I'd be open for any questions.
Thank you, Curtis. Is there any questions from the committee for Curtis there? Okay. Curtis, are you going to remain online for all four resolutions?
Yes, but this concludes the testimony as all four go hand in hand with our project.
And will you be available for questions if they come up on the other three?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Lisa Parker, are you online?
I'm for House Concurrent Resolution 3.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to have public testimony on this resolution? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony. Any committee discussion on the resolution? Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to make a motion if we are done with discussion.
Go ahead and make your motion.
Thank you. I wish to move House Concurrent Resolution Number 2, Version E, with
no fiscal note.
No fiscal note and individual recommendations from committee.
Hearing no objections, it's moved from committee. We'll take a brief adjournment while we sign the resolution.
Thank you.
Number three.
Madam Chair, I will move HCR 3 version R, and there is no fiscal note, so just be with individual recommendations.
Just to hear it?
I will make a motion to move it out of committee with individual recommendations.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. We're not at that.
I'm just going to hear it.
Madam Chair, just I appreciate the assistance to the committee, but just to have it on the record, I think it would be valuable.
Okay. I'm sorry. I was confused.
Okay.
My apologies.
But I, Madam Chair, I appreciate it.
Okay. You want to object for discussion?
I will object for purpose of discussion.
Okay.
Thank you.
Representative Ramirez.
Thank you, Co-Chair Edgman. Thank you, Co-Chair Millett. I apologize for being a little clumsy to introduce four resolutions, but it was very important to me to introduce resolutions that incrementally address how to build a state bullet line. And I appreciate the indulgence of the committee not to aggregate these together into a single resolution, because, in fact, I think to call on the old cliche about how do you eat an elephant, and the answer is one bite at a time. I think it's very important to recognize that a bullet line and its construction has incremental components. And so that is why these are numbered this way. The first component is sourcing out a thorough supply, and not just a contingent supply of gas. And that was our concern with GUBIC as we approached HCR number two. HCR number three addresses reopening of the Agrium plant. And again, if I can take the committee, with your indulgence, Madam Chair, if I can take the committee back to a 500 million cubic feet per day gas pipeline is 180 billion cubic feet annually. And so the components that will make up that pipeline, because I'm sure everybody at this table will agree that the fuller the pipe is, the lower the tariff for all users on that pipe. So it's in our best interest to have a pipe that is full of gas molecules. And if we were to aggregate all of the light commercial and residential consumption of natural gas throughout the rail belt, recognizing the Anchorage marketplace as well as a fully built out Fairbanks marketplace and communities in between, we would only represent about 60 billion cubic feet a day in or a year in capacity. In fact, if Curtis Thayer is available to testify as we move through these again, I'm sure that part of his testimony would be that once the Fairbanks market is built out because of the degree days, which is the way that a fuel company would measure how many gallons of oil you need to have in your underground tank, that although Fairbanks only represents a community of 90 to 100,000 people, and South Central is a community of 300,000 people, or a metropolis and neighbor and bedroom communities that amount to 300,000 people, you would learn that the Fairbanks market can be as much as 80 to 90% of the consumption of the Anchorage market because of the degree days that we have and the colder temperatures that we have. But even with a fully built out Fairbanks and Anchorage market at 60 BCF a day, that pipe is only one third full. Restarting the Agrium plant would add, if you're ready for this as an industrial user, another 60 BCF a year of usage. It is that large of a consumer of natural gas. We've had conversations with Lisa Parker, who sadly is the last man or the last person standing down in the Kenai area, where once there were 250 thriving jobs. And I was at Agrium when they were beginning to go into their shutdown phase. I was at Agrium with a number of people in the 24th legislature when we took a tour in their classroom and looked at a gas to liquids plan to try and save the plant. At the time, it didn't work because the cost outweighed the benefit. It was a $2 billion plant, and the asset of the Agrium had a value of about $1 billion. In this case, a bullet line solves the problems for Agrium. Now, as much as I am concerned about the economic well-being of the Kenai Peninsula, and certainly everyone at this table is because of our speaker, but beyond that, I think many of us have seen articles in the Daily News Miner, in the Anchorage Daily News, in other regular newspapers across the state, that the cost of fertilizer is anticipated to rise by 400%. And that is a direct relationship to the fact that we were able to have another of a very short list of value-added industries in the state of Alaska. And the requirement was cheap natural gas to create a urea plant, and we were exporting fertilizer through Agrium to much of the world. And one of the byproducts is that Alaskans had one of the cheapest fertilizer rates in North America. And it certainly was very relevant not only to the health in the Kenai Peninsula as it related to high-paying jobs for the Agrium plant, but it was also very relevant to co-chair Finance Stoltz's district and the Green Belt of Mat-Su, and to former Speaker Harris's district and the Green Belt in Delta Junction. And you will find in future testimony, Madam Chair, when we look at the potential of growing barley as biofuel in the Delta area, which is well suited for that, if we cannot bring affordable fertilizer into that equation, it would take it would make the cost of any kind of a biofuel strategy for energy for a unique solution to a unique part of our state out of reach on a BTU cost. And so the Agrium plant and restarting it has many functions for the Kenai area, for the Mat-Su borough, for the Delta growing region, as well as for recreational gardening enthusiasts across the state, which, you know, goes right to our quality of life and Rudy Giuliani's broken window theory, which is the prettier it is, the better we have healthy communities. So the Agrium plant is key to many corridors in our lives. And frankly, this administration has not been doing enough to address this issue. One of the only things that this administration is doing is asking the Department of Law to generate a white paper to determine if fertilizer is produced in the Kenai on Alaskan soil by Alaskan workers with an Alaskan asset that pays property taxes into the Kenai municipality. Since that product is exported, does the production tax holiday that applies to any in-state use of gas apply to the Agrium plant and the products that they produce? Now, I would tell you, if you got that many Alaskans doing that much work on Alaskan soil, then absolutely it does. But I believe that the administration can take a more active role in working with interested parties to get Agrium back online. And I don't know whether you will get testimony from the folks at Agrium, because there's politics involved, and that's not a consideration that I have, Madam Chair. But they've made repeated attempts to reach out to this administration and have been rebuffed. And I felt it was quite critical to actually address this in a very acute fashion, so that this administration sits down with the folks at Agrium and is directed by the co-equal branch of government to do so. That concludes my testimony. I'm available for questions.
Thank you, Representative Ramos. Is there any questions from the committee? Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have just sort of a general question, and maybe I should have asked this one before we talked about that previous bill as well. Have you done any studies, or does anyone have any information as to whether the building of the bullet line will have a delaying effect on the building of the major, larger natural gas pipeline that we've been talking about? I've heard rumors that if this is built, that that would delay the building of the other line by maybe another 5 years. I'm just wondering if anyone has any information about that, whether someone here on the committee or someone that's one of our people who testified online. Thank you.
Representative Ramos.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Peterson, in fact, we've had testimony from both TransCanada and the Denali project during our special session in the summer that the in-state gas pipeline is complementary to their projects. And it addresses some of the takeoff points. So I think that we should be very assured that it is helpful for them. And none of the 35T of proven reserves that either Denali or TransCanada would be tapping for the large diameter pipeline are in the Gubik area.
Any other questions from the committee? Okay, with that, we'll open it up for public testimony. Lisa Parker, are you still with us?
Probably scared her away, Madam Chair.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you now. Can you state your name and your affiliation, Lisa?
Yes, my name is Lisa Parker. I'm with Agrium US. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the opportunity to testify today. Before you, the resolutions that are before you today are very important to provide economic stability to our state. I'd like to, if I could, just give a couple minutes of some brief background on Agrium facility. After almost 40 years of operation in September 2007, we had to close the Agrium Kenai Nitrogen Fertilizer Plant due to a lack of natural gas supply in Cook Inlet. While it was in operation, this facility put over $350 million into the Alaskan economy, with a significant portion of it going to businesses in the Kenai, Anchorage, and Matsu areas. Agrium is in support of the bullet line and the resolution before you today. And we've had discussions with the various organizations and companies that are interested in building this line. If the bullet line is successful, and if we were successful in negotiating contracts to purchase, this would put a billion-dollar industrial facility back in operation. It would restore jobs to the area of those 150 employees that were laid off in 2007. Still, a third of those people are unemployed. It would provide the Kenai Peninsula Borough with a stable tax base. It would provide jobs and income to various businesses and support industries. As Representative Ramirez so eloquently stated, it would also provide urea that is needed by our agricultural industry, as well as provide a urea supply for the Department of Transportation, the international airports, both in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and other airports that we have sold urea to in the past. I would like to correct Representative Ramirez in that there are currently 10 employees currently at the facility in Kenai that are putting the finishing touches on mothballing the plant. And I won't be the last one out the door because I'll be out the door in about 5 weeks. I'll be happy to answer any questions that you might have. I appreciate the committee and the legislature looking into this issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. Is there questions from the committee for Lisa?
Madam Chair, if I could just add just a bit of commentary. There's no sadder story than that. When those of us that visited that plant, there were a couple hundred people working there. And there is no sadder story in Alaska and no greater clarion call for why we need an in-state bullet line than to get that skilled workforce back into the Kenai, working, buying groceries, owning homes, putting their kids through schools. And there's a lot of quiet enjoyment to be had in Kenai. And 10 people mothballing a plant, somebody as talented and articulate as Lisa Parker, it's a shame.
Thank you, Representative Ramirez. Jerry McCutcheon, are you online?
Yes, ma'am.
Could you state your name and affiliation for the record?
For the record, my name is Jerry McCutcheon.
Okay, thank you.
Any gas line is neither needed nor in the best interest of Alaska. Alaska does desperately need is a gas liquid pipeline of 150,000 barrels a day down the Parks Highway to Cook Inlet as Exxon, BP, Conoco had planned. The gas liquids are worth more than oil. There isn't enough gas line for a gas line. We had all the gas on the North Slope. We're still 20 to 30, 25 trillion cubic feet short. Now turning to this gooby gas line. You don't have enough gas. You've only got 600 billion cubic feet of gas. That isn't going to get you anywhere. You don't have enough gas for the gas line. Originally, NSTAR figured it'd have to be a gas line of 1.2 billion cubic feet of gas, and that was about 2004. And now they're going to say they're going to do it on 500 million cubic feet of gas. No way. It isn't going to make any economic sense. You can't get the gas to cook inlet at a rational pipe. You're not going to reopen the plant. You're not going to have any LNG. None of them are going to fly. So what's the purpose of all this? Is to keep the legislature off balance, chasing a mythical pipeline that you have been doing for 30 years, one way or another, so Conoco can continue to peddle its overpriced gas. Reopening of Arizona isn't going to happen. Their DOA said there's another 7 to 13 trillion cubic feet of gas in Cook Inlet. Why don't you do something to get a jack-up rig into Cook Inlet? Why don't you do something to get Escopedia so into a position it can drill? Gubik gas just isn't going anywhere. And you, the getting the amount of gas would be necessary to sustain even that small gas line is beyond the capacity of Anadarko. That just isn't there. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McCutcheon. Is there anyone else online that would like to testify on this resolution? Anyone in the audience that wishes to testify? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony.
Madam Chair, I'd like to remove my objection.
Thank you. Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I can just make a comment just for the record, and maybe it'll make Mr. McCutcheon feel a little bit better. I want him and anyone else who's listening to know that there are a group of us who are working with Escapeda Oil. We're working with Danny Davis, who is the main principal there, and Kevin Banks with DNR. And this has been ongoing since November. And I hope for success there also. So I just want to put your mind at ease at that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dahlstrom. And I think that DNR and Kevin Banks has given them some extended period of time to come together and form a unit, and so we're waiting to see if that's successful.
Correct.
So, what's the will of the committee?
Madam Chair, let me just once again say that I had objected earlier to ACR 3 for purpose of discussion. I'd like to remove my objection at this time.
Thank you. Like to make a motion to move
the vote? I'll make a motion to move ACR 3. Version R with individual recommendations, move it out of the committee.
And no fiscal note?
There is no fiscal note, yes.
Hearing no objection, so moved. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the paper. At this time, the Energy Committee will hear, take up House Concurrent Resolution Number 4.
Madam Co-Chair, I'd like to move HCR 4 for the purposes of discussion, and in doing so, I'd like to object so we can discuss it.
Thank you
for that.
Representative Ramirez, would you like to present HCR 4 to the committee?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'll be brief. As we've discussed, a 500 million cubic foot per day gas pipeline would need 180 BCF annually. In order to fill the pipe and allow for the minimum amount of tariff per MCF. As we have discussed, all of the residential and light commercial gas usage in the rail belt would be approximately 60 billion cubic feet a year. If the Agrium pipe, if Agrium were to reopen, they would take about 60 billion cubic feet a year. And if the capacity of the pipe annually is 180 billion cubic feet, we would still be 60 billion cubic feet short. Therefore, I would encourage, as is appropriate, for the governor and this administration to initiate a dialogue with the U.S. Department of Energy. I will tell you, Madam Chair, that in the last year, myself, Senator McGuire and former Representative Samuels visited two of the commissioners with the FERC, along with a larger Senate delegation that included Senator Terrio and Senator Dyson and Senator Wagner. And in a second visit, it was just Senator McGuire and Representative Samuels and myself, and we met with the chairman of the FERC and with the director. And when the director, Mark Robinson, came to Anchorage for the AGEA hearings last year, we had another visit with him informally after the hearings. And he conveyed to us that it is critical that we involve the U.S. Department of Energy and that they will be a critical component in filling this pipe, and that export licenses are difficult to grant because within the U.S. Department of Energy there are many reservations, because the United States energy supply sometimes is robust, and sometimes, as we saw a year ago, our excess supply is very lean. Therefore, it's important for this administration to open a dialogue about expanding that export license capacity. The relationship with Conoco and their LNG plant is 40 years old. It is unique in the United States. And our ability to expand that license is critical to have as an early dialogue in order to build up capacity and lessen the tariffs for all Alaskans. Also, Madam Chair, because the export component of a gas pipeline would be subject to a production tax, unlike in-state usage by all of us as Alaskans, in times like these, with the kind of budget deficits that we're running, this would be an important additional income stream for the General Fund of Alaska, because the production tax would apply to the export component of an in-state bullet line, whereas there is a almost a tax holiday for in-state use. I think the maximum is 17 cents per MCF for in-state Alaskan use, but the prevailing production tax would apply to the export component. It would be an important income stream for the state of Alaska. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Ramirez. Are there questions from the committee? Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was wondering if they've done any studies as to what the cost of this bullet line would do to the price of natural gas. It's a $4 billion price tag, I believe is the number I heard, of building this line. Is that going to increase the price of natural gas above and beyond what it is for consumers in Alaska right now?
Representative Ramirez.
Madam Chair, I'm delighted, through the chair, I'm delighted to answer the question for Representative Peterson. I will remind the committee that this bill speaks to the export component with regard to directing the governor to initiate a dialogue with the U.S. Department of Energy. That being said, gas coming from Gubik or somewhere near the North Slope would be subject to the same tug-of-war that we have seen in the Cook Inlet, where there is a vibrant discussion between the RCA as the prevailing regulatory body and the supplier of gas. In this case, the Cook Inlet is a depleted field where some of the producers, in my opinion, are less incentivized in a depleted field where it becomes increasingly more expensive to explore for and then extract gas than it would be in the Gubik area or the North Slope area, where gas is still abundant, and the cost and the exposure that the consumer has is to the regulated tariff that would come off a pipe that was one-third full or two-thirds full with Agrium, or completely full with an export expansion license granted by the U.S. Department of Energy. And so, to answer Representative Peterson's question, we would be far better off to be early in exploring an export expansion license, because that would reduce the prevailing tariff significantly if that pipe were full.
Representative Tuck.
Yes, through the chair, do you recall or do you know when we, out of the Kenai Peninsula, how much we did export at one time, the height of our export in natural gas?
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, I think that the right person to answer that question would be Curtis Thayer, because presently, when NSTAR has deliverability problems, because the Cook Inlet is already so depleted, the LNG plant shuts down, or they have a diminished volume, so that those gas molecules, it's an interruptible contract, so those gas molecules can be redirected toward NSTAR commercial and residential customers. So my recollection is that it's about 40 million cubic feet a day, which would be about 1.2 billion cubic feet a month, which would be about 12 BCF a year, I believe. But I think Curtis Thayer could give you more exact numbers if you don't have someone else who can offer that testimony.
You can ask Curtis. Curtis, are you online?
Yes, I am, but I don't have the numbers off the top of my head for what the LNG capacity is. The LNG plant has not been running at capacity for several years. So what their total capacity is on a given day or year, I would have to get back to the committee on that with those numbers.
Okay, thank you. We'd appreciate that. Any other questions? Representative Tuck?
And through the chair again, is this, so we're not looking to need to build another gas liquids plant. We're pretty confident that the gas liquids plant that we have right there will be able to handle the export needs of having this bullet line going through for the excess that's needed for the full capacity of the line.
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, I can assure you that we won't need to build or expand the existing LNG plant if we don't initiate a dialogue with the U.S. Department of Energy to get an expansion of our export license. And since the construction and the completion of a bullet line is 5 years away, that's why I think it's critical to direct the Palin administration to initiate a dialogue with the Obama administration at the U.S. Department of Energy right now so that we begin that conversation early and we leave Alaskans the most amount of time, since ultimately it's going to be Alaskans living here in the state that are going to have exposure to that tariff and not Alaskans that may be living out of state.
Representative Tuck.
Thank you very much, madam. I also wanted to know, with the three divisions that we've had, these three resolutions, are we looking at pretty much the same price of gas going down, one for agrium, one to be exported, and then one for the consumers, retail, and commercial aspect? Or is there going to be price differences coming through? Is one going to be subsidizing another, or has that even been yet determined?
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, I don't think that's been determined yet, but as Curtis Thayer would tell you from NSTAR, because I've asked precisely that same question, NSTAR has two businesses. They have the business of negotiating for gas and then selling it to us as the seller of that gas, and the premium they take is their regulated return on those transmission lines. And secondly, they are a shipper of gas, say for large consumers like Providence Hospital, that strike their own deals with Cook Inlet suppliers. And I would assume that Agrium, because they would be consuming one-third of the gas in a bullet line, would enjoy preferable pricing to residential and commercial customers. But seeing as how I'm a customer of Fairbanks Natural Gas in Fairbanks, and I'm paying $22.91, which is the highest cost for natural gas in the United States, I'm quite comfortable that Alaskans are going to see a competitive rate, and folks in South Central are going to enjoy the certainty of supply for decades to come and the predictability of robust pricing.
Okay. Any other questions from the committee? Do we have anyone online, or I'll open up public testimony. Do we have anyone online that would like to testify on HCR4?
Frank Abeg.
Okay, Frank.
Yes, I am in favor of large
industrial
use.
Can you restate your name and affiliation? I'm sorry, for the record.
Sure. This is Frank Abeg. I'm at Fairbanks and just a resident taxpayer. And I've studied the gas pipeline supplies and the history of use of Cook Inlet. And I'm a little frustrated with the extension of the LNG license for ConocoPhillips. In some ways, it has precipitated the problem of limited gas supply in Cook Inlet. But I also understand that their past investment and opportunities they provided for Alaska. The gas pipeline does need a large industrial user, and I would be in favor of extending the license for the LNG plant at Kenai. But I would also be interested in extending it or for a limited number of years based on other uses of that gas within state. There are opportunities, I believe, that will come along if the state decides to build a Susitna Dam. There are large limestone deposits in the area that could make cement, and that would need gas. There are new gold discoveries in the interior that would be a good user of gas, and we have the coal-to-liquids plant out there as a potential anchor for military bases and for creating jobs and good products through Alaskan labor. So I am in favor of the LNG plant getting gas, but on a limited basis.
Thank you, Frank. I think we have a question for you from Representative Ramros.
Hi, Frank. It's great to hear your voice. I know it's 30 degrees below zero in Fairbanks, and we're probably all burning a lot of fuel oil today as we speak. My question for you is, wouldn't it be great if we didn't have a legal limitation of 500 million cubic feet a day and we could afford to have an export component and pursue other value-added opportunities instead of being capped off like we are because of the AGEA legislation that was signed into law last year?
I agree, because there is a lot of potential gas along the bullet line. Nenana fields, they're expecting or anticipating a reserves of 2 to 10 BCF, or trillion cubic feet. You've got the Yukon Flats as close as Stevens Village with possibilities of 25 trillion cubic feet. You've got the North Slope with anywhere from 35 to 80 trillion cubic feet, and you've got the Gubik line, the Gubik field. I agree that the 500 is probably what it takes to make the line work, but it'd be nice to have additional capacity within the state.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Representative Ramos.
So, Frank, if we were successful in getting the export expansion of the license, and that bumped us up right at 500 million cubic feet, and then the development of International Tower Hills, perhaps the largest gold mine discovery in North America in the last 10 years, came up, and if Representative Newman's efforts to open up a gas to liquids in South Central opened up, and if the Mat-Su concrete plan opened up, and we were otherwise committed, and we couldn't take our usage up above 500 million cubic feet because we had promised those rights away to a Canadian company, TransCanada, that would be a shame, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would be.
I agree. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Frank. Is there anyone else online that would like to testify on HCR 4? Hearing none, is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify on HCR 4? Seeing and hearing none, Representative Edgman.
Madam Chair, I'll remove my objection to HCR 4, and in doing so, make a motion to move HCR 4 out of committee with individual recommendations, recognizing that there isn't an attached fiscal note to it.
Okay, hearing no objections, HCR 4 is moved out of the committee. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. With the Energy Committee, before us, House Concurrent Resolution Number 5, Representative Edgman.
Madam Chair, I will move HCR 5 and then object to it for purposes of discussion.
Representative Ramers, would you like to present your resolution to the committee?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'd like to talk about HCR 5 by talking about wood bison. Only the state of Alaska is capable of spending years and years trying to open up the Nenana Basin for gas exploration, and then having another wily arm of the same state government introduce a potentially endangered species into that area. And as is often the case, we are our own worst enemy. In this particular case, HCR 5 says that in our effort to provide energy security for all Alaskans, which is what a bullet line would do, that is the unified theme of these four incremental resolutions, Madam Chair, and I thank you for your co-sponsorship of these four resolutions. We are asking that the government, in atypical fashion, actually smooth and eliminate hurdles, regulatory and such, so that we can allow for a private sector entity to make a final investment decision by November of 2010. I have seen a schedule for the NSTAR pipeline, which is the only private entity that has said on the record, Madam Chair, only in the other body's resource committee last week. They said, we have $1 billion. We have $3 billion worth of credit lined up. We're ready to go, and the only thing we need is for the state of Alaska to get out of the way. And HCR 5 says rather explicitly that the state of Alaska should get out of the way and should remove any regulatory hurdles so that they may make their own final investment decision. Obviously, by statute, we cannot statutorily make somebody build a gas pipeline, but the state is certainly capable. And a powerful administration with the most powerful chief executive out of all 50 states certainly can participate in clearing hurdles. And, Madam Chair, the reason why I introduced this resolution is to speak to Mr. McCutcheon's previous concerns about getting a jackup rig into the Cook Inlet. It was quite clear to many of us who sat at that committee table that the governor was espousing one point of view, which was drill, baby, drill, and the Department of Natural Resources as it related to a jackup rig in Cook Inlet and to opening up Point Thompson for development, that the DNR was moving in a different direction. And in this particular case, when an in-state bullet line is essential to the energy security for all Alaskans, and we have a limited amount of time to reach that final investment decision so that people in my community who are freezing at 30 degrees below zero, and although they may be enjoying $2 a gallon home heating oil now, we have certainly no certainty that that's going to happen in years going forward. I live in a community that is paralyzed by fear that we're going to have oil shock, no different people that lived in Indonesia after the giant tsunami. Every time that there was an aftershock, they hid in higher ground. My community is frozen. And Co-Chairman Edgman, I know that you have empathy because the people in your communities are suffering also. An in-state bullet line would free and liberate people along the rail belt. But I am concerned that government, being the clumsy oaf that it is, will continue to shackle these people and will now not allow us to reach a final investment decision on a timely basis. And so this would direct the governor to remove those hurdles and to be an active participant in addressing such issues as wood bison. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Ramos. Do we have some questions for the sponsor? Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I was just wondering, do you know when the proposed release date of the wood bison is, and that's supposed to be in the Nenada Basin, am I correct?
Representative Ramos.
Through the chair, Representative Peterson, I don't know. The Fish and Game assures us that it's not a problem, that it's under the reintroduction of a species thing. It's just weird. Government is weird. It does stupid things, and one arm of government hurts another arm of government, and all I want to do is facilitate the people in my community and the people along the rail belt getting gas, and the way to get them to gas is to move expediently toward a final investment decision. And a final investment decision can happen when government gets out of the way and smooths the wrinkles. And so that's a great question for the state of Alaska, DNR, or Fish and Game, or whatever governing body there is. But I wish that this governor would help us remove hurdles instead of passively standing by and allowing hurdles to stand in the way of energy security for all Alaskans.
Thank you, Representative Ramos. Is there any other committee questions for the sponsor? I will open public testimony. Is there anyone online that would like to testify on HCR resolution number 5? Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify on HCR 5? Hearing none, I will close public testimony. What is the will of the committee? Representative Edgman.
Well, I think I have to think about the
We have an hour.
Madam Chair, with much practice and much precision, I would like to withdraw my objection to HCR 5 and make a motion to move HCR 5 out of the committee with individual recommendations, and there is no attached fiscal note. Yes.
Hearing no objections, HCR 5 has moved from the House Energy Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee.
And with that, our next energy meeting will be Thursday from 3 to 5, where we'll be hearing an overview from Alaska Housing and Finance on the weatherization program.
Madam Chair, question?
Yes.
When we convene in Kotzebue and Nome, are those going to be informal meetings? Are they going to be for informational purposes, or will those be on the record?
Representative Ramos, thank you for the question. Those are actually noticed meetings, and they will be on the record, and we will be teleconferenced in both communities, and I believe Kotzebue will be on the radio, televised or throughout the community on public radio, and I believe we're doing that in Nome also. So they will be official meetings of the Energy Committee.
So then, Madam Chair, is it appropriate to say that we will be convening on Saturday?
In addition.
Is that right?
Yeah. So we're going to finish with the Thursday meeting, and then we'll be on the road Saturday. And I was moving that way. But and we'll also be convening on Sunday. So we'll have a meeting on Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Excellent. Okay.
So is the program for the upcoming week. Representative Edgman, did you have any comments before we?
No, Madam Chair.
No.
Madam Chair.
Representative Johansson.
Under committee closing comments, if I may.
Yes.
Thank you. Just a comment to the sponsor, or through the chair to everybody, but about the sponsor of these resolutions. You know, since over a year ago, the sponsor has been very public in trying to get these projects done. He's almost been, it seems like, the only guy who's been standing up and really pushing this as an issue. And it was an issue over the summer, and I was thrilled when I heard in the State of the State the governor embracing this issue that the Judiciary Chairman has been very public and vocal about over the last year. And I'm pleased that he's introduced these resolutions that gives this body the opportunity to join him as he was out there all by himself for a long time. And I'm thrilled that these are out there, and I appreciate your introduction of these.
Thank you.
Thank you. With that, is there any more committee comments? Representative Dahlstrom?
I concur with what's been stated. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thanks. And with that, I'm sorry, Representative Tuck.
Yeah, and I agree also, and I think that having this bullet line going through the state of Alaska is going to give us some great opportunities to provide those low-cost energies for new industries to get developed and get started. Alaska is such a strategic location with the Pacific Rim, and having the deep water port that we have there in the Kenai Peninsula, which really is only our industrial park that we have currently, we need to keep that alive and keep it going. And I hope through the efforts that through these resolutions will provide that new industries will begin flourishing. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Tuck. Representative Peterson? Okay, with that, I will adjourn the House Committee on Energy.